You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
Oh, no. I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Last week, I spent some time taking talkback calls on ABC Radio on the subject of digital television and digital radio. And I came away from that with an understanding that there is still a great amount of confusion in the broader community about digital TV, which has only been compounded with the launch of digital radio. So, here's the digital lowdown as it stands today. Digital TV and digital radio are two entirely different beasts and are completely incompatible with each other. A digital TV receiver, or a set-top box, will not receive digital radio, and a DAB Plus receiver will not receive TV. The confusion probably stems from the ability to receive narrowcast radio broadcasts via your set-top box for services such as ABC's Dig and SBS's news services. These services are in fact radio services, but the broadcasters have chosen to transmit them as part of their digital TV service. The methods of transmission are completely different when it comes to comparing digital TV to that of digital radio, or DAB+. Another myth is that digital radio is going to replace traditional AM and FM radio, and there's nothing further from the truth. Digital radio is a complementary service to existing radio services. At this time, there are no plans to turn off any traditional radio broadcasts. Moving on to TV, there have been a lot of mixed messages surrounding the urgency to purchase digital TV reception equipment. There's only one timetable that needs to be adhered to, and that's the government's switch-off timetable, which can be found on the Tech Talk Radio website. If you want to buy something before those dates, then that's your choice. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. When it comes to upgrading to digital TV, you can do one of two things. Buy a new TV with a built-in digital receiver, which means you don't need a set-top box, or buy a set-top box to convert the new digital TV signal to work on your existing analog television. This means you can use your existing TV beyond the analog shutdown dates. If this appeals to you, then you only need a standard definition set-top box, as you can't watch high-definition programs on a standard definition TV. Unless, of course, the box you buy has a down converter. There's another type of digital TV receiver, which is called a PVR, or a personal video recorder. This is the equivalent of the old VHS machine. It's the same as a set-top box, with one exception. It has a recording device built in the form of a hard drive. Think of it as the digital VHS machine for modern times, no tape required. The PVR will function exactly the same way as a set-top box, so you don't need a set-top box with a PVR. There's a little more to it than what I've just discussed, but armed with what you now know, don't let any sales bully tell you otherwise. If you want to watch the new digital channels, then a new digital TV, set-top box, or PVR is for you. But if you live in one of Australia's capital cities, what you have will work perfectly well until the middle of 2013.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner looks at portable devices such as netbooks and tablet PCs. iiNet gets the gong as a standout ISP. Twitter takes a leaf out of Apple's book when it comes to third-party apps. And Microsoft banned from selling Word in the United States. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra's mobile revenue overtakes fixed line earnings for the first time. The ACMA announces a review of Australian Commercial Radio Code of Practice. The Primus data centre in Melbourne crashes for the third time this year. and researchers are using GPS collars to track kangaroos. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra's Chief Executive Officer, Mr. David Thodey, announced in a press conference last week that the telco's mobile phone revenue had overtaken earnings from fixed line services for the first time. Telstra's net profit has risen 10% from this time last year to just over $4 billion. Telstra's CEO, Mr. David Thodey.
We're very pleased, strong results. And I do have to stress, these are in tough economic conditions. We've delivered on all the commitments we made for 2009 and also commitment to the dividend.
Mr. Thodey assumed the role of CEO from Mr. Sol Trujillo, under whose reign Telstra saw the loss of thousands of jobs and significant damage to the company's share price. Mr. Thodey also revealed that Mr. Trujillo's final pay packet was just over $9 million for the last 10 months he spent at Telstra. This included a $3.4 million bonus payment, but Mr. Thodey was not keen to elaborate at the press conference.
All I know is that the company was very fair in terms of honouring the contracts that were in place and have worked through fairly and in a considered way what the payout was due.
The revelations came after Telstra sent a letter to its customers last week explaining that everyone would now be billed $2.20 for paying their accounts in cash. Although the telco announced a 10% rise in profits to just over $4 billion in 12 months, Telstra defended the introduction of the new fee by saying that it is consistent with industry practice and customers can avoid it by paying online or with direct debit. Consumer group Choice agreed with Telstra's explanation and said late last month that Telstra customers do not appear to be unfairly disadvantaged by the new fees. A Choice spokesperson also said that the move could actually help the digitally illiterate to expand their knowledge by introducing them to fee-free methods of payment. Telstra's share price closed at $3.60 last week, down from $4.43 at the same time last year. The Australian Communications and Media Authority last week hinted at the introduction of tighter regulations to ensure that commercial radio stations are in tune with community expectations. A wide-ranging inquiry has been announced into the content of commercial radio programs after a flood of complaints was received following the now infamous Kyle Sandilands Jackie O lie detector faux pas. 2 weeks ago, Today FM in Sydney broadcast Kyle Sandilands and his co-host Jackie O interrogating a 14-year-old girl about her sex life. The girl spoke on air about being raped when she was 12 years old, to which Sandilands asked glibly if this was her only sexual experience. Today FM suspended the program, but Chairman of the ACMA, Mr. Chris Chapman, says that the ACMA will be re-examining the existing code of practice for commercial radio content.
The incident with the Kyle and Jackie O show has galvanised action as a result of what we think is very significant community response and media response, but underlying all that, below the radar, we had quietly been monitoring this, doing some research, and been thinking about it in the context of the current code of practice.
Mr. Chapman said that the inquiry will be wide-ranging and, if necessary, result in tighter industry regulation. Australian ISP Primus Telecom was left red-faced last week after the third complete failure of its Melbourne-based data centre this year. Primus apologised to affected customers after the outage on Sunday last week, which left internet customers in Victoria and Tasmania offline for several hours. In an email statement to customers, Primus said the problem started with a fuse failure at a City Power substation, but conceded that its own diesel-powered backup generators had also failed to start. Primus Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Ravi Bhatia, told ITY last week that a substation upgrade had already been planned as a direct result of previous data centre failures in February and April. Looking to the future, Primus said that the substation upgrade scheduled for Friday and Saturday last week would include the installation of new high-tension switchgear and transformers. And researchers in the Australian Capital Territory say that early results from a kangaroo tracking program show the animals have a limited home range for feeding. Experts from the Department of Territory and Municipal Services are partway through a two-year project to monitor the movements of eastern grey kangaroos using GPS collars. So far, the collars, fitted to 24 kangaroos, have revealed that males stay in an area of about 3 square kilometres, while female kangaroos remain in an area of about half a square kilometre. Each collar needs to be retrieved in order to download the stored information, and the collars are designed to automatically release after 2 years and signal their location to researchers for collection. a senior ecologist at the department, said that the research data could provide information on the scale of population control programs, and that the data would also, in part, be used to help reduce the number of road accidents involving wildlife around Canberra. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Optus and Woolworths commoditise mobile telephones. Graham, you spoke about this in the news.
Yes, I did.
What's going on here?
There's new vampires about and they sparkle and I don't understand why.
Well, I don't know that it's the answer for everybody.
Let's be clear about this.
Yes, in 3D.
Everyone will pay money to lawyers.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the only thing that we can all be sure of.
And that's a good example.
But really, he had to recuse himself so much now.
It's every geek for himself.
It may well be. So,
I thought this might have died a natural death and if no one spoke about it, it would just go away.
Ah, the Great Wall of Australian Internet.
No, you're not allowed to do that. That's stalking.
That's right.
Read the Crimes Act.
I reckon ABC3 with its kids content will do better than Go by the sounds of it.
Kitchen Nightmares CSI and Hit...
Oh, that's a new show.
Hang on.
Kitchen Nightmares CSI.
I like the idea of that. The legs are now at Kitchen Nightmares colon CSI.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Remember me? I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across in front of me is Dr. Ron and the one and only Graham Callaghan. Boys, sounds like you had a bit of fun there.
You've taken over from a radio program. What's going on?
Look, you can have it back anytime you like, Dr. Ron. I think you need to practice and,
I think you're right. I wrestled the keys off you there for a couple of weeks. It was a lot of fun.
Well done.
It's like we brought back the family car. I hope it hasn't got too many dents in it.
Look, I'm sure the wheels will still go around in motion and all that sort of stuff. So,
I don't know.
There's some strange scratch marks on the radio.
So what's been happening? Just listening to the news thing then in the middle, because I've been completely out of it due to certain circumstances. So I've sort of climbed back on my Twitter box and I've been tweeting and reading up and ferociously trying to find out what's been going on. But you've had an interesting 2 weeks, I hear.
We did have an interesting 2 weeks. Yeah, not only in here in the studio, but Graham and I had a good night on Saturday night doing some Linux hacking.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, did you tweet that? I did get your email saying that for, the first time in 3 years you were going to shut down one of your Linux things.
Yeah, which was unfortunate. It had to be shut down the week before. Anyway, and I thought, this is all bad. We can't have machines that need to be repowered, so we set to upgrade it, replace it.
Yep, brand new Linux server running on a Celeron.
It's on an Intel Celeron. It's got half a gig of RAM and a 40-gigabyte hard disk.
Running Fedora.
Computers are cheap these days. Why didn't you get something which would future-proof you for 10 years rather than 2 years?
Well, that was top of the line about 3 years ago, I think.
That's when I bought it. I rest my case.
But In a larger commercial environment, what I would recommend in that situation is you can actually get some cheap tier one equipment.
Some what?
Cheap tier one. I mean,
Tijuana?
No, tier one.
Oh, okay, tier one. Yeah, sorry.
Meaning, the major manufacturers designing equipment specifically to act as servers rather than normal PCs.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones I use are IBM. There's plenty of others out there, Compaq and a few others.
This is just a workstation, and really?
Yeah, this is acting as a very smallish server. But, you can get inexpensive equipment from the likes of IBM and others around the $1,000 mark, not much more than an ordinary workstation.
Pretty good these days, isn't it?
And you get a nice warranty with it, and they come out, and if the hard disk fails, they come out and replace it, and all that sort of good stuff. So.
Oh, yeah.
But running a Linux operating system without a X Windows screen, so it's all run in text mode.
Mm-hmm.
So the machine
speeds things
up no end.
Yeah,
and the machine doesn't need a text mode a graphical display. It's only acting as a web server and a mail server and all that sort of stuff. So
and as of about 4 o'clock this afternoon, a DNS server.
Yes. It runs.
Did you get my text message?
It was running nice and fast. I did get your text message. Yes, you will have to open port 43 if you want your DNS server to talk to the outside world.
53,
sorry.
Yes. Back to DNS for dummies for me. That's okay.
Well, see, that's what happens when you don't do things for 3 years. You forget, don't you? You just don't do the maintenance because you don't need to.
Other thing you do, when you do a major cutover like that, we were, just the two of us, we were building the machine in the middle of the night. And yeah, it was getting to be quite late by the time we were moving the last of the services across. So
you said that I tweeted, Andrew. The birds were certainly tweeting when we finished up, I think.
Yeah, it was daylight when I got home.
Chances are you didn't start until after several episodes of Star Trek and a few more pizzas going down the track.
That's right, too. I didn't tell him that.
We did watch Star Trek, didn't we?
We had it absolutely. Look, I can read you two like a book.
Oh, no, we're our own worst enemies. We start out with the best intentions at 7 p.m. We're going to take the system down at night time when it's not going to inconvenience everybody. And it gets to 11 o'clock and we think, we probably should start that server upgrade now.
Because we thought, we'd better have some dinner.
How long will it take, a couple of minutes?
A couple of minutes.
Yeah.
No, it all went very well, though, Andrew. Thank you. So I've got a nice new server that's going to last me for many years yet, I would expect.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Good luck with it.
Fedora 11 is the operating system that it's running. If you're interested, you can go to fedoraproject.org, I think, and have a look.
Sounds about
right. Yeah, you can even download desktop-type versions if Windows is not your bag if you want to try something else.
Well, speaking of bags of Windows, we're all excited about Windows 7. Graham and I were talking off air just before we came on the radio this evening about where is it? So
yeah, I thought us partners were supposed to get it by now with our Action Pack subscriptions.
I thought
I read somewhere, now I might be wrong and I might have misunderstood, but I thought somewhere Microsoft said we were going to get it on the 16th.
Maybe you did. I'm having I'm with the powers that be at Microsoft on Wednesday, so I'll ask them. They might know, but they'll deny everything because that's what they do.
They usually do.
No, I don't know.
That's not my department. Somebody else looks after that. Yeah.
Now, speaking of large organisations, Dr. Ron, in the news just that you read before,
yes,
Telstra Billing. Now, listen.
What's going
and there was someone
on
talking
there?
About this on our chat before, like. All of a sudden, I get my little note, and I'll say we have one Telstra service in the household because we have to, and it's sort of said on the bottom of the bill, if you choose to walk into a Telstra shop to pay this, you're going to be slugged an extra $2 for the privilege of walking in and handing over your cash.
I don't even understand how that can be legal. Isn't it supposed to be? Aren't you supposed to be able to pay your bill by cash, legal tender? That's what the law says.
Exactly.
You send us a bill, and the way I can pay that bill, the law says I can pay that bill by giving you some money. Here's some money.
You can still do that, but they're going to charge you for the privilege of paying your bill.
Well, that can't be right. That can't be legitimate.
The only way that you can avoid paying the $2.20 is to set up direct debit with your bank account.
No, you can also avoid it by using BPAY.
Really? Are you sure?
Change providers if you want. That might do it too.
That might do it as well. You could go to Optus or Vodafone.
I'm pretty certain.
No, they'll have it too.
Pretty certain the letters I got, and I've got a nice little collection of these letters at home because I've got a couple of Telstra services.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that they said you could pay it by BPAY and avoid the charges.
Well, I pay my Telstra bills via BPAY at the moment, so I'll let you know if I get the charge or not. My reading of their first media release that I saw was that it would be the $2.20 fee would be applied to everything except direct debit. And I can remember thinking, well, that's pretty rude because I don't use direct debit for much, if anything.
Yeah, no, I don't like direct debit.
It suits some people, but it doesn't suit me. I want to be in control of when my bills are paid.
Well, direct debit is if, that's my bank account that I need to live. And if they make a mistake and they shift and they drop a decimal point and instead of charging me $80, they charge me $8,000, then, I'm in a lot of trouble. I'm not going to be able to eat.
And mistakes are made on accounts. Like if we look at last week's odd spot, whatever it was, the guy who got billed $14 trillion on his
bank right.
bill. Because it was blamed on a computer glitch. If that happens and they just completely empty your account, you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
That's right. How am I going to put petrol in the car to get home? How am I going to, buy the milk?
Put your SIM card in. Now, I must admit, they're not Robinson Crusoe here. Other companies do that as well. And one of the things I find disappointing with the phone companies, rather than offering an incentive to be on the right side of doing direct debits, they penalise you for not conforming. And Telstra is sort of no guiltier, if that's such a word, which probably isn't, than, say, Hutchison 3, who, when they introduced their, if you want to pay, or if you still want to keep your paper bill and all that, we'll ping you an extra $2. But at least I don't believe if you walk into a Hutchison shop, are they going to charge you $2 for the privilege of, which I think is a bit rough.
Yeah, I think walking up, settling the bill in person, in cash, how can that be? How can they charge you extra for that? That can't be right.
Anyway, there you go. There's a bit of a grizzle for the day. I just think that if large telcos and organisations like that are going to get away with it, who will do it next? The banks?
The banks are already
The telco announced a 10% rise in profits to just over $4 billion.
Oh, so
like
they're
Dr. Evil.
So they're short of
$4 billion in 12 months.
So they're short of cash, are they? Yes, their profits are going up, so they need to squeeze us a little bit tighter.
But look at the banks. You know, apparently this global financial crisis has really been hurting them bad. Yet they're returning record profits. And
Australian banks are in the best shape of any banking system in the world. What are you on about?
Yeah, tell them that. But anyway, that you know, you look at some of the banks and they're actually feeling, well, I don't know whether the word guilt ever comes into the mind when it comes to banking, but some of them are actually reducing fees at the moment because they think they've finally realised that they're actually, they're stretching the friendship with a lot of customers. So.
Yep.
It was interesting to see I was interested to see the response from Choice, the consumer group. They agreed.
That surprised me,
Really surprised me. They agreed with Telstra's explanation about the fees being fair, and they said that Telstra's customers don't appear to be unfairly disadvantaged by these fees. And a spokesperson also said that the move could actually help what they described as the digitally illiterate to expand their knowledge by introducing them to
fee-free methods of payments. Don't force people to do this. Encourage them to do it.
Make it as an incentive. If you want people to use BPay or direct debit, offer a 1% discount or a 5% discount.
Telstra charge top dollar for use of their network, and as a result, I reckon they've got room to move, considering the profit margins that they're actually talking about. And one of the other things, which we should just jump to now at the moment, considering we're talking about Telstra, did you know that Soul was paid $9.06 million in 2009?
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Now, if you divide that by the number of the customers, I reckon there'd still be change left over after everyone paid their $2 for what Soul walked away with last year. $9.06 million was Telstra's former chief executive Sol Trujillo's remuneration, including salary, bonuses, termination payment. I wonder what that was.
The actual termination payment.
Yeah, I wonder what the termination payment was.
No, they wouldn't. Now, Mr. Thodey got grilled about
that last week. His termination payout, totaling $3.76 million, comprising $3 million for 12 months of fixed remuneration and $764,000 in accrued annual leave.
There you go. That's pretty good.
You should do the maths on that during the break and divide by 52. What's his weekly wage?
What's his wage per minute?
Yeah,
if he sits there and picks his nose, or he's sitting on the royal throne, what's he earning per minute?
Anyway, Sol, who left the company on May the 15th after almost 4 years in the job, was paid a salary of $2.61 million and short-term cash incentive payments of $2.62 million. His total remuneration was $9.06 million for the year, compared to $13.39 million in 2007-2008. So he took a pay cut.
Yeah, he did. Good on him, too.
But then again, he didn't deliver much in the last year.
Taking a hit for the team.
Apart from a lot of angst and all sort of stuff. In other interesting news, one of Sol's henchmen, is that the right word?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Remember
Greg? Associates would be the other characterisation. Yeah,
no, I wasn't going to go that nice on him.
One of Dr. Evil's henchmen, yes.
Greg Wynn, remember him? The Sol Trujillo appointed chief operating officer of Telstra until February 2009.
It was a win-win situation.
He put his little mousy tail between his legs and skedaddled off around February. He was paid a bonus of $2.2 million for outcomes related to the delivery of the carrier's IT transformation. Well, having spoken to a few people who work for the company, and boy, are they not complimentary about the IT revolution that's gone on within that organisation, how can you get a bonus? There you go. That's a little bit of gossip on the Telstra side of things. And the bill stuff, that's just really disappointing. So,
you're right, though. They should be offering an incentive to pay in the way that they want you to pay, offering an incentive rather than penalising people for doing it every other way.
All right. That's our gossip for the opening of the show. If I go back onto the rundown, it says that, Dr. Ron, you got a bit of Coro over there.
Oh, just a little bit, yes. We had some new forum users sign up, which I thought was worthy of note. If you're not a user on the forum or a member of the forum, then you should be. Go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au and register there. You can view notes about the show and discussion topics of interest. Hello to Spike In, is it?
Who?
Spike In.
Spike Inny. Spikini.
I don't know. Spikinen. I don't quite know how that's supposed to be pronounced, or even if it's supposed to be pronounced. Hello also to Musk in Sydney. Now, Musk was contributed to last week's program, or the week before. And hello to Daniela, I think it is, or Daniela, who have all registered on the forum of recent times, which
welcome aboard, everybody.
Yes, we use the forum to post show notes and to discuss topics.
And come up on, if you want to have a chat to us while we're live to air, if you're listening to us, say, New Zealand, on Magic, or if you're listening to us here in Melbourne on 94.13 WBC, you can contribute live or on the net, of course, to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Come along and say good day.
You can. You can also watch us on Ustream. You can watch a studio webcam.
Someone's saying it's a white box there at the moment.
A white box, is it?
Is that a problem?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
We're radio.
Yeah.
Good with television.
Yeah. My computer's telling me that we're streaming, but have a look anyway. Okay. Ustream.tv/techtalkradio.au.
Okay. Is that the Coro?
That's a Coro.
Oh, well done, that
short
man.
And sweet.
Absolutely.
We got it all over and done with when you weren't here last week.
Terrific. The National Broadband Network is starting to, I don't know, festo? Is that a word?
What's like been happening with the broadband
the
network, Andrew?
The singing, all dancing National Broadband Network, which was touted to save Australia as we know it from everyone, probably predominantly from Telstra, there's a lot of, I know, it's the mudslinging, they're throwing big clubs of dirt at the moment, and there's also all sorts of other things like shareholders are going to be king in the NBN talks and things like that. Telstra's main objective when it comes to the National Broadband Network was to protect value for its shareholders, according to Chief Executive David Thodey.
Yep.
Under Thodey, Telstra has taken a cooperative approach with the federal government on its NBN plans. He said on Thursday, Telstra was continuing that approach, which is so out of character for that particular company.
Mm.
Ever since the government basically said, well, we're going to do it and you can come to the party or you don't come to the party type sort of thing. So former Chief Sol Trujillo had a combative approach to the issue and the telco was temporarily excluded from NBN negotiations under his tenure. Boy, doesn't things change in 12 months.
Yes.
So, like, there's all that that's sort of, you know, maybe the giant has been tamed a little bit. Other interesting news, the broadband won't come cheap. The first national broadband network rolled out in Tasmania will cost an estimated $20,000 for each premises that takes up the super-fast internet connection. And business leaders say that it's impractical. That's a lot of money when you think about it. I'm wondering how they're working that out.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's all lies, damn lies and statistics.
Well, $20,000 per... They're throwing mud around, aren't they?
Yeah.
The Rudd and Bartlett governments, which are jointly undertaking the rollout, refuse to reveal the taxpayer-funded plan's costs. So they're not even going to help. Obviously, there's got to be a taxpayer-funded amount that goes into that. However, industry sources told The Australian that the take-up rate had been an estimated at 17% of the 200,000 targeted premises, homes and businesses. So whether you're going to pay a really steep whack like that or whether it's going to be subsidised, which one can only assume that it's going to be subsidised, is probably yet to be seen.
Mm.
Now, finally, the number that they've been throwing around, the $43 billion.
43 bajillion, yes.
Apparently, according to some, that's been plucked from thin air.
Oh.
It was just a nice number at the time. And
that sounds good.
The government allegedly just pick a number, any number. I'm surprised they didn't go for 42. But that's my personal opinion because I'm a Douglas Adams reader.
Yes.
When the Kevin Rudd proudly announced the government's plan for the national broadband rollout in April, it was a political triumph. The headline figure of $43 billion instantly capped the nation's imagination. But the $43 billion estimate always owed more to political sort of haggling than any detailed financial analysis because we never saw. No one ever got the numbers on this $43 billion. And I believe the opposition even tried under freedom of information to pull those numbers out. And we're going to get a bigger bill than what the NBN.
So it was going to cost them more than $43 billion to do the FOI request.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, there you go. It's instead of $43 billion number was the product of dazzling political maneuver backed by just enough financial assumptions and figures to allow key departments such as the finance and treasury to give their go-ahead on it. So, yeah, that because we haven't seen anything there now, the speculation about the NBN and you know, I'm not saying it's not a good thing for Australia, it is, but I think we need to sort of work out a little bit how much it's going to cost and who it's going to cost and, I know. If you're going to be up for 20 grand to plug into the goodness gracious me thing, then maybe we have to stop and think a bit about it. But bring on competition. iiNet, Internode, all those guys. Very much.
So this is where we need publicly owned infrastructure, if in fact it does cost $20,000 per premise to have the access to the NBN.
I can believe that if there's only a small number of premises connected, yeah.
Mm.
But as the network grows, the cost per premises must go down.
And you can have a look at a cost per user as well. You might be talking about a node into a city building is the same cost as to a house or something, and you've actually got, you know, hundreds or thousands of people accessing it for that amount of money versus a family of three or four or five.
But at the end of the day, too, you've got to look at the competitors' rollouts of their networks. Take Telstra, for example, who would probably be a direct competitor to the NBN unless they come on board. You know, earlier on this year, we talked about how the black cable, oh, sorry, is it the black cable or the HFE technology?
HFC
yep. technology, which is the cable that delivers Foxtel and broadband that way.
They said they were going to be boofing up the...
In the city centres. Yeah, in the city centres with the DOCSIS 3 technology, yep. they were actually promising by Christmas, which is only 4 months away, you know, high speeds, up around 100 megabits per second in your cable coming out that way. So, look, who knows? And, of course, don't forget they've also got their mobile broadband network, which is, you know, getting faster by the year as well, although the fact we don't have devices that can take advantage of that. But nonetheless, you know, you got to look at what they're going to be doing, competing with the NBN or other providers. You know, it's just too many questions we don't know the answers to yet. All right. In other news this week, an Adelaide youth was arrested for a virus attack. Can you believe it or not? A 20-year-old Adelaide man has been charged with infecting 3,000 computers worldwide with a virus designed to capture banking details. The 20-year-old is also suspected of having developed software capable of launching virus attacks on 74,000 computers worldwide. Police believe that the arrested of the man from Adelaide's West was given them intelligence likely to lead to further offenders. The man was arrested after a three-month investigation by Electronic Crime Section of the South Australian Police Force in conjunction with the AFP. So, there you go.
Very good. Very good. Well, lock him up, throw away the key.
Look, this day and age out there in technology, you look at what's available to people if they want to do bad things. There's, you know, it's software. That's all it is. If you've got the ability to write software, then you've got the ability to do bad things online, whether you call yourself a hacker or a criminal. I don't know. Whatever you want to call yourself. But that's, you know, doing wrong online is not the right place. So good on them for catching someone like that. I think that's excellent.
We've always had to maintain a balancing act as well between security and usability. And it's like a seesaw. It's like, and the more accessible, the more usable you make a particular product or suite of applications, the more vulnerable it is from a security point of view. Obviously, from the other side of the coin, the tighter and more secure and harder to access something you make, the less usable it is. And
yeah, the other thing that affects the security of these systems is just a little bit of awareness of what's going on. Take a bit of time. Once you've got your head around how web pages work and using the internet, take a bit of time to understand the URLs that appear at the top of the page. Understand how they're structured. Start to learn what part of it means what. And that way you'll be able to spot when someone's trying to trick you. If Absolutely. You just learn a little bit more than the average punter knows about the way web browsing and the internet works, you don't have to become an expert. You don't have to become, a computer genius to understand this. You can just start to understand little bits about how a URL that those internet addresses are put together, and you can start to spot when someone's doing the wrong thing.
Because it's best to err on the safer side. You're absolutely right, spot on there, Graham. I was listening to people discussing things today, and one of the mottos for people who aren't experienced in internet use is delete, delete, delete. And what they're talking about there is deleting emails from banks because they don't send them, deleting emails from people who you don't know,
yep.
and deleting emails which contain unknown attachments and things like that. Because the real way that computers become infected these days is either through email or going to a website which has malware put on it. Now, one of the biggest problems these days is that these hackers are actually attacking sites which traditionally are trusted sites. That is, it's a site which might be a supermarket site or something like that, and people go to those sites.
It might be one of the news sites or one of those information sites run by a trustworthy company.
Absolutely, and they've been hacked, and they've had this little bit of malware stuck.
But even
on
if
the
they
site
haven't been hacked, there's another way in that the bad guys use, and the way they do this is through the advertising. You know, those sorts of companies don't run their own advertising on their websites. They outsource that to another company. Yep. And the people who want to advertise submit that to the advertising company, and the advertising company puts the ads on the page. And every now and then, the bad guys can submit a dodgy ad that gets onto a legitimate web page. Mm-hmm. So these things can happen. You've just got to be, you know, keep your guard up, keep your Windows updates done, keep your antivirus software up to date.
Speaking of dodgy ads,
good antivirus software too. And one last thing, if I can, before you move on to your dodgy ads. The best security tip I ever heard about online banking and secure websites, if you're using a secure website like an online banking or your company's webmail or whatever it might happen to be, always type the address into your browser yourself. Don't trust bookmarks or links, and especially don't trust links in emails. Always type it into your browser's address bar yourself. And that's the safest way.
That's a good point. Don't trust links or graphics which appear. It's like, say, click here as well.
Yep.
You don't know where it is you're going
to
be going.
To get to your secure site, type the address yourself. Speaking of advertising...
Oh, speaking of dodgy ads,
yeah.
Did you hear the furor a few weeks ago or a month or so ago now that on Facebook where they, you know, you have all the little paid advertisements down the side of the screen, which helps to pay for your access, free access to Facebook. There were some dodgy advertising agencies that were actually, they were accessing the images or the profile images of your friends, which you allow to do in the fine print and the checkboxes, which no one ever looks at.
Yeah.
And they were using Facebook gallery photos in the paid advertisements, but the husband noticed this because he was on his Facebook and he noticed a profile picture of his wife and it was in a singles advertisement on the, on the side of his Facebook page.
Thought, whoops,
oh, that's a bit strange. Yeah, it sprung, that's right. And after he verified that it wasn't actually, his wife hadn't used that in the singles site, he found out that these advertisers actually using all these images without permission. Or was it with, may have been with permission. It was all very, very confusing and Facebook went into damage control and said, oh no, we've banned that advertising agency from accessing your information now. But yeah, just be wary of what you put online because it can end up anywhere.
Yes, and especially with Facebook where, yes, you can get in trouble because your friends can give people permission to access your stuff.
That's right.
That's one of the problems with Facebook. So, yes, be aware of what you're putting online for sure.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan and Andrew McComb in this evening. Just before we go to the break, have you heard of domain tasting?
Domain tasting. No, I've heard the expression. It's like wine tasting.
No, I was going to say it's not like wine tasting.
You swill the domain around in your mouth and then spit it out.
You could probably say it is a bit like wine tasting. Apparently, there was a loophole in the system. Like, we're talking about responsible organisations here, where you could actually register a domain name and not pay for it for a period of time, like a couple of days.
And you look at the amount of traffic you get to it?
That's right. So domain tasting exploits a loophole in the registration laws that allows a website to be registered for 5 days without payment. Now, this applies, I believe, only to the top-level domains.com and .net. There might be others, but in particular these guys. Now, I can have closed this down. But if you think about the scammers, you think about all those dodgy guys. Remember the old Commonwealth Bank scams we were getting recently? I bet you this is how they did it. The domains lasted only 5 days. They register them, wouldn't cost them a cent. They'd do their phishing, they'd point it to their server, and then after the trial period expired, that was it, gone. Who cares? The domain has been, you know, trashed well
and it hasn't cost them a cent because they haven't paid any money for registering the domain.
Correct. So anyway, ICANN, who is the registrar of, or should I say the organisation involved in policing domain names,
yes,
said, no, we're not doing this anymore. That's enough. Time's up.
But it was only for top-level domains, like the .coms and such.
Yes, right? Yes. There was actually, if I can find the link, I'll find the report. But it was a pretty incredible amount of numbers of domains that were being tested by these guys. And it was really organisations that would register as many as they could think of and see which traffic it actually found its way to those domains. And obviously, you've got that level of spamming that was there as well. Yeah, so basically back in June 2008, there were something like 18 million domains registered. It started off even a bit higher than that back earlier on, but since they've culled that down, the domain tasting, in March this year was down to 2 million, so it's already come down considerably, and they've obliterated it completely at the moment. So there's one less method of exploiting unsuspecting web users. So that was domain tasting. I thought it was quite interesting, really.
Because domain names aren't obviously just used for web pages. They feature predominantly in everything that we do on the internet, including email.
Emails, yeah.
Yeah, so people would be registering.
But I think the main thing these would be doing would be driving people to a web page that's only there for a few days. So in your spam, you send out an address. And use the tasted domain would be the domain you drive them to.
Yep.
And that could be like a bogus or an imitation bank website or something.
Exactly right, yeah.
We had a little incident at the office during the week with one of the machines became infected with a mail Trojan.
Uh-oh.
Which was not good.
Was it your mail server?
No, it wasn't my mail server.
It was a client
behind the mail server, behind the corporate firewall. So obviously someone had been to a site and somehow had got malware put on it. It was one of those mail bot things, one of the little zombie bots.
Yeah, sending out emails,
yep.
Nasty.
And it would send out through the mail server, and it was becoming incredibly frustrating because...
Now, don't you run an Exchange server at work?
No.
You don't? Okay.
No.
All right. Okay. So one solution that if for people that do run exchange servers is just to block your clients, your workstations from being able to send mail out on port 25.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you could do that, but I use my mail server, a different one. But
anyway. Right.
But Spamhouse, which is one of the big anti-spamming types of things.
I was about to say you have to be careful or you'll get yourself blocked. You'll be blacklisted. Mm.
Well, it does it. It was very quickly blocked within the space of a couple of hours.
Yep.
So... And which the good thing about that was it drew my attention to the fact that there was a problem and I could go and fix it.
Bad thing about that is everyone else on your connection got blocked with him.
Correct.
Yeah. So no one could send email.
It was good. It was lovely.
Well, it's good from the internet's point of view, but it's extremely frustrating from your point of view.
What we're talking about here with Spamhouse is it's a private company that you know, just as part as their business, keep track of sources of spam, people that are sending spam out. And you can sign up as an internet user, you know, as someone who runs a mail server that's accepting mail, to do a lookup at Spamhouse or any of the other blacklists. They're called real-time blocklists. So
RBLs.
Yeah, when you receive an email from somebody, you look up and see if they're on the list, and if they are, you reject the mail. It's not compulsory. It's not part of the mail system. It's just an add-on that this company offers to other people to use.
And a lot of people use them.
A lot of people do use them. Yeah,
it's just one of the you know many tools that that people have now, or that should I say these organisations, ISPs and the like, have in their arsenal to try and minimise spam.
Exactly right.
It's just out of control. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to be talking with Adam's going to be talking about mobility and these wonderful new gadgets and devices which have found their way onto our laps and restaurant tables and cafe things all around
and
town.
And beds.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Tell us about your new toy. This is
the one that occupies the room.
This is gadget of the year, this one.
I just want to click an Xe and have this work.
So you've got a workaround for the Android market now for your Android.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes.
The only option is to buy it outright then.
It is, it really is.
Have you unplugged all the fax machines? Yeah, go on.
I tell you though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky.
Internet villain of the year.
And the moral of the story is backup.
Backups, for goodness sake.
This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. According to some of the information on the chat this week, Dr. Ron, you had a music issue last week.
I didn't have a music issue at all.
Challenged.
No, the music was really good. Everyone was saying, bring back Andrew. When's Andrew coming back?
Dear, and if you're listening to us on the podcast, you'll have no idea what we're talking about. We actually play musical interludes there while we have a drink and a sugar hit and something like that at this hour of the night.
Well, I said that last week. Some people choose to listen to their Tech Talk without music, and for them, that's okay, that's good. But for those who choose to listen with music, yes, it was a contentious issue last week.
Yes. Well, that's good. That's what we like here.
That's right. You're missed, Andrew, anyway.
Ah, that's good. Yes. It's nice to know. now, speaking of interesting things, you're a netbook user, aren't you? That's the technology of your choice.
I've got a netbook right in front of me at the moment, and it's driving our Ustream feed.
Is it? There's some fairly interesting little netbooks around at the moment. I was looking at, I think, one of the Kogan ones at the moment. Very cheap.
Yes, they are. They're like disposable computers. When you compare them with the price of laptops, which are... can be thousands and thousands of dollars. You can get really good little netbooks for a few hundred dollars.
I think they're very well worth the investment, I think, especially for because they're small. Like, I think Sony have a little one that goes in your back pocket. I think I've seen them advertised on bus stops around town with someone's bottom and a laptop thing sticking out the back of it and all that sort of stuff.
You wouldn't want to forget it's there and sit down, would you? You'd be out a couple hundred bucks.
Well, I reckon you can do that on telephones too.
Yeah, that's a problem. People iPhone with in your back iPhones, pocket. Yeah, people sitting down.
Interesting little crack in your back pocket there.
So to speak.
So I knew you'd draw that to everyone's attention, but that's what you do. Hey, Adam Turner, our regular correspondent, our writer for he writes for The Green Guide and The Age and a lot of freelance publications and stuff like that. He has a view from the couch, and the view this week is all about these little devices. But actually, he hit the road. He went to his local cafe.
Oh, did he?
That's what he does. He drinks coffee everywhere he goes.
And he gets paid for it.
Yeah, and takes his little netbook with him.
This week's view from the couch is coming from the tables outside one of my favourite cafes because I want to talk about mobility. The first thing is the tablet PC. If you found the tablet PC a bit hard to swallow, A swivel screen netbook could be the answer. Tablet PCs seem like a great idea, but with the exception of a few niche markets, they never really took off. The first Windows-based tablet PCs were very underwhelming, bulky, expensive, and underpowered compared to the equivalent notebook of the day. They certainly failed to deliver the futuristic user experience that I think many people were hoping for. To many people, I think the dream tablet PC is really more of a slate PC. Terminology varies, but generally a slate PC is considered to be a tablet PC with the keyboard ripped clean off rather than just folded away behind the display. I know I've been long dreaming of a sub 1 kilo A4 or A5 slimline slate, the kind of thing a Star Trek ensign would hand to the captain listing the week's duty roster. Apple's rumoured tablet sounds like it comes close to this, but Apple rumours are like rectums. Practically everybody's got one. I learned long ago not to put my faith in supposed leaks from Cupertino. While rumours of Apple's vaporware circulate, there are a few netbook-style tablet PCs that are actually on the shelves. Asus's EPC T91 seems to show a lot of promise, although I haven't got my hands on a review unit yet. It weighs in at a fraction under 1 kilo and a fraction under $1,000, with an LED backlit 8.9-inch display, the absolute smallest I consider for a netbook. The touchscreen works with both a stylus and your finger, but unlike the iPhone, it's not multi-touch, so you can't do things like pinch the screen to zoom in and out on photos. The fact that the T91 is based on a netbook rather than a notebook gives it the size, weight and price advantage of a slate PC without the need to sacrifice the keyboard, delivering the best of both worlds. The thing that really impresses me about the T91 is that rather than dumping vanilla XP Home on it, Asus has added extra touch-friendly software. TouchSuite looks like it offers an application launcher and a few other features, perhaps similar to Origami on ultra-mobile PCs. There's also a photo viewer and a few other applications. Whether or not TouchSuite is any good remains to be seen, but at least Asus recognises that it's usability that makes or breaks a touchscreen device. The other main thing on my mind is dirt cheap notebooks, because Australia's cheapest 10-inch netbook just got cheaper. The 10-inch Kogan Agora is now $399, sporting a 1.6 GHz Atom N270 processor. But you'd be far better off with the $439 Agora Pro, which doubles the RAM and battery capacity to 2GB and 6 cells respectively. Both come with Linux pre-installed, but you'd be better off putting your savings towards a copy of Windows 7. I found that Release Candidate 1 runs very smoothly on the Pro, and you can even try it for free to see if you like it more than the Go OS Linux that comes with the Agora. Considering Microsoft's determination to cripple Windows on netbooks, buying a cheaper, powerful Linux netbook like the Agora Pro is a handy way to sidestep Windows 7 Starter Edition and the 1GB RAM limit. Thanks, mate. Retail versions of Windows are for suckers, but if you chat to your local computer store, I'm sure they'll be able to hook you up with an OEM version of Windows 7, as long as you buy something else at the time. I found the Agora Pro's graphics performance under Windows 7 was considerably better than GoOS or Ubuntu Netbook Remix. Even with a few applications running at once, I had no trouble playing YouTube clips smoothly or switching between tabs on graphics-intensive websites, something GoOS really struggled with. The image from the webcam under Skype also looked better. I suspect this is due to the maturity of the Windows graphic drivers compared to Linux. There goes a tram. Unfortunately, the thing about the Kogan Agora is that cheap seems to apply to the build quality as well as the price tag. I'm not the only reviewer who had to send back a few dud samples before I got a good one to test. Things to particularly watch out for are flaky wireless performance and excessive flex in the keyboard. Thankfully, there's a 7-day return policy and a 12-month warranty. If money was no object, then the Agora Pro wouldn't be at the top of my shopping list. For example, the Asus EPC S101 is a beautiful machine to use and apparently can be upgraded to 2GB of RAM. Of course, the S101 is more than double the price of the Agora Pro. If you're on a tight budget and want bang from your buck on a netbook that will let you get out and work while sitting at your favourite cafe, the Agora Pro should certainly be on your shortlist.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So what else do you do with your little netbook there, Dr. Ron, apart from coming here to the studio? Do you use it out in the field?
Yeah, I do. It's very handy. Now I've got tethering set up on my mobile phone. That means that if I'm not in range of a Wi-Fi network, I can use my mobile phone to access the internet. And I can get.
Was that easy to set up?
It was harder than it should have been to set up. They deliberately don't want you doing this because it means that carriers like 3 and Optus and Telstra and everyone, they're not selling the little dongly, what do you call them, little express cards, PCMCA cards.
Or USB.
Or USB, that's right.
Mobile broadband devices, yeah. They want you to have a separate phone account for your laptop just to get data through.
They want to make money. Silly. Separate phone, separate account.
It's a little device that I've got, the handset that I've got. I just get a USB cable with it and you plug it in, you put the CD in and it says, do you want to use this as modem? And you go, yes, and off you go. What's wrong with that? That's easy.
Few and far between those sorts of things these days, I reckon.
Well, maybe that's part of your buying criteria when you go and look for your new handset, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think that's what you want to do.
Yep. But I do use the... Now, Adam was talking about the tablet EEE PC. I've got an Asus EEE PC here in front of me at the moment. And I just...
too many E's.
There are too many E's. I just twit-picked a photo of it. So if you're looking at my twit-pick stream, you'll see it there. And it's running our little radio, television studio here tonight. And it's great. And to answer your question, yeah, I use it for all sorts of stuff. I can use it when I'm sitting on the couch at home. I can use it when I'm out and about in the car. If I'm going on site somewhere, whatever, I can take it with me, chuck it in the box. And it's not so big that I have to worry about lugging it around. It's quite small and quite portable.
How'd the battery life go on those things?
Really good. Yeah. Really good, yeah. I'll get probably 3 to 4 hours out of a fully charged battery.
Better than, certainly if you want to prorate it across a day's use, better than your mobile phone with Android.
Most definitely the Android phone.
Cupcake.
Yes, my internet access will die before the laptop dies, that's for sure. The netbook dies, I should say. That's definitely for sure. The other good thing about this one is that it doesn't have a hard disk.
So it just all boots off, SD RAM, is it?
Exactly right.
Nice and fast. Exactly.
It is nice and fast. So it only has 8 gigabytes of storage capacity, but if all you're doing is having an operating system there, checking email, web browsing, doing the odd thing like this, running like a Ustream type setup, that's all you need.
Hmm.
If however, you do want to run big applications like Photoshop or you want to do web design or graphics editing.
Yeah, it's not for you.
It may not be for you. It won't run as fast as you'll need it to and you won't have the storage capacity.
And you won't do anything like that on your mobile phone anyway because I think they're just the next bit between a laptop or they fit the gap between the laptop and the portable device, don't they? Whether you use your Jazz Jam, your old iPhone or any other business, a BlackBerry or things like that. This gives you a bit more screen and a QWERTY keyboard. Away you go.
That's it. No, like Adam, I've got faith in the Asus product line. Be interesting to see what they come out with and how well the tablet-y type devices are taken up.
Very good. We had we are having here in Victoria a inquest, a Royal Commission, I believe the word is, into the bushfires that ravaged this state back on the 7th of February this year. And today we had a few interim reports come out. Now, Graham, you were interested talking about the SMS technology and the early warning systems that they were talking about in this report.
Yeah, well, communications is something that that they have talked about. They've talked about the language being used and all that sort of stuff in the interim report. That's got a lot of media coverage. But one thing that worries me is that I think that some of the decision makers that are planning the improved response, they sometimes get hooked up on technology issues that they don't really understand. And one of these is the use of SMS warning alerts. And I just thought it would be worth making comment now to remind people that there's a... SMS is a particular technology that has particular behaviour. In particular, it's not guaranteed delivery the way it's normally used. So you send an SMS... it might arrive at the recipient sometime in the next 3 days. Now, we all know that most of the time you send an SMS and the recipient gets it almost straight away.
But we all know from first-hand experience if you send a Happy New Year message at 5 seconds past midnight on New Year's Day...
And that's exactly right. It might get there sometime 2 or 3 hours later or maybe 6 or 7 hours later or the next day. There's... Under times of heavy load, in particular, this is going to get worse. And under times when the network's under stress, like in a bushfire situation, there's going to be A, lots of phone calls going on, B, the network might lose the odd tower or two because the towers are on top of the hills where the bushfires go. So the remaining parts of the network that aren't damaged tend to get more load. the system's not going to work reliably. Now, some people have been talking about sending, you know, putting mobile phones on a register so that they know the mobile phones of the people who live in the area, and then using that register to send an alert to those mobile phones when that's, you know, when there's a bushfire on the way, or when it's time to leave, or whatever the message, whatever the urgent message might be. And this is absolutely the wrong approach. It will not work. It will fail. It will not achieve what people think it's going to achieve. The only way that SMS might be useful is if they actually modify the base stations so that you can originate the urgent message from the base stations and send it to any phone that happens to be connected to the base station at the time. This solves two problems. That means that the base station's originating the message, so it doesn't get caught up in the network delivery and get held up for 3 days. It also solves the problem that you're sending it to the people that are actually in the area, not just the people that are on the register. So you're not going to send a warning to somebody who's on holiday in Queensland at the time. You're not going to send a warning to someone who's, you know, put their name on the register and moved out of the area 6 months ago. And you are going to send a warning to people who are, just happen to be in the area on that day and need to know, but aren't on the register. You've got to do it that way. Now, I understand that the technology might not quite be there and it might involve doing a lot of work, you know, modifying base stations. You might have to modify the software that runs the base stations or something like that. Work with the telecommunications providers and the people that are making these decisions. Talk to someone who understands the technology at a nuts and bolts level, who can help you to make intelligent decisions about these things.
It certainly raises a lot of questions, this report, as it's been tabled, interim report.
Yes. And it is only an interim report. There's a lot of things that aren't in it. But it's, yeah.
Here in the Southern Hemisphere, we're ending our winter. We're about to start spring again, which means our fire season for the next season is not far away.
70-something days, they're saying, is the start of the fire season officially.
We've got a lot of more of the same to look forward to, too, from what they're saying down here in our southern states. And, of course, as most of the country knows, it hasn't rained here for many years, which is testament by the level of water in our reservoirs. But let's get back to the
The dryness of the environment, yep.
Let's get back to the technology.
The technology is the thing that we can concentrate on. There's a lot of other issues that are going on around the place, but you know, our job at Tech Talk Radio is to provide information into the community about the technology. And technology isn't always the answer. In fact, in a lot of cases, in emergency situations, technology is not the answer. But if you are going to use technology, you've got to use it carefully, very, very carefully, and with understanding about how the technology works.
So, obviously, SMS has been, I think they call it a store and forward technology.
Yep.
That is, it'll hang on to it, as you were saying there before, Graeme, before passing it on to the devices.
And if there's lots of other traffic going on, SMS is the last in the queue.
The one thing, though, about SMS, though, it is a fairly lean and mean technology. We're not using a lot of bandwidth. It's a short pulse of energy, and it gets its message out relatively simple and straightforward.
That's true.
So, if you think about the other options that someone trapped in a situation might experience, obviously, you've got your fixed landlines, which potentially have melted and burnt down anyway, especially if your fire's up the road.
But then again,
so is the
mobile phone tower is probably...
But wouldn't you have more chance of having, A, your power cut off, B, your fixed line cut off, and then potentially you're just relying on your mobile phone with batteries? That's really the last port of communication that you have.
And that's true. And that's why people are looking at this technology as a possible solution. And I'm not disagreeing with that. I think that's right. The mobile phones, particularly in Australia, have got massive coverage. It's almost impossible to find somebody who doesn't have a mobile phone. So there's obvious potential there to use it, but you've got to use it wisely.
So what's the solution? Like, I know that's I don't expect an answer to that question. It's out there for everyone to talk about.
Talk. Just make sure that when you are talking to people, and if you are, if you're in a position where you can influence those who are making decisions, make sure that somewhere in the loop is a telecommunications technician, someone who understands how the technology works.
One interesting thing, too, which I guess I'm going to put on my local farming hat because we're involved in a community which
property
is a little bit further north of where we are. The local Country Fire Authority has a UHF CB channel, which everyone in the area knows to listen to.
Yep.
Now, a broadcast on that, you know, you can get handheld CB units, you can get CB units for your car, you can get CB units for inside.
In fact, it's hard to find a CB unit that isn't designed to use in a car. You know, even your home CB unit is probably one that's designed to be used in a car and then been mounted up in a in another device, isn't it?
Mm, that's right.
So, and so it's dead easy to hook up a 12-volt battery to make sure that that keeps running, like a car battery, to make sure that that keeps running when the power goes off.
So
and when the generator runs out of petrol.
So potentially what we need, or one of the things, and once again, this is purely speculative sort of discussion, but I would say the social networks are already in existence in a lot of respects, and it just potentially needs a little bit of local organisation on those channels. But, I could be wrong.
Well, that
but
depends on
those
the community.
Networks are there now.
Yeah, some communities are really great with that, and some communities are not. Some communities are perhaps a bit younger. They've got a lot of people who have moved in a bit more recently who aren't in that mindset. They don't have the UHF-CB. They don't have the mate who's been in the CFA for 20 years.
But don't you think after what happened in February the 7th that people may just change their way of thinking?
Well, you'd hope so.
Because it's them that's going to help. It's not your neighbour's going to knock on your door and go, hey, guess what?
People need to change their way of thinking. Like, I've got nothing but sympathy for what's happened to hundreds and hundreds of people in those fires. Mm. It was just a terrible situation. But it's maddening to think that, like, I know how much mainstream media publicity there was leading up to that day, saying, on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is no fire threat and 10 is the maximum fire threat on this scale, the threat is 562 or something. There is, the state is going to be incinerated. There are going to be massive fires tomorrow. The wind is like nothing we have ever experienced before. The temperature will be at least 45 degrees Celsius. Mm. You must put your plans in now. If you're going to stay and defend your property, then you must be prepared to do that. If you're going to leave, you must leave now.
Changed their approach on that one, haven't
well,
they?
Well, they have. And people are still saying, but we weren't sure about what to do. We weren't sure if there was going to be threats or not. Well, look, yep. It doesn't matter how much technology you put in place. People still have to use that technology. They have to use
it. But it's also a case, Dr. Ron, of using the technology in an intelligent way.
Well, yeah,
there's no good having your fire warnings being posted on a website. People in a fire area where the smoke in the air
and
the
power's
off, then they're going to be on
the
roof. They're going to be on the roof. They're not going to be looking at the fire warnings on the website. What you're going to have to do is crank that handle on the CFA warning siren. Forget the new technology. Forget digital anything.
No, you're right, because if the Royal Commission says all we need to introduce is SMS system, I can just see it now, and it's tragic and it's terrible to say, but there's going to be people sitting at home in their lounge rooms looking at their phone going, well, look, I can see the flames in the front yard here and my house
but
sounds like it's on fire.
SMS.
I haven't got a text message yet, so I'm not going to leave.
That's right.
Like, you're right, Graham. There are so many systems that have to come together to complement each other. You can't just rely on one system like SMS.
That's right. And there's another thing, too, that people have got to be aware of, and the push to get everything digital and everything online is not the answer for these sorts of situations. Okay, the website is not what people are looking at when they're on the roof with their hose trying to hose down the fire. They're with luck, what they've got is their battery powered radio. Okay, and odds are they're not even listening to the local FM station. Odds are that's been blotted out. Okay, the weather conditions are bad. The hill that the tower that the local FM station's transmitting on's been burnt. Odds are they're listening to 774 Melbourne if they're in Victoria. That transmitter in Melbourne on less than 1 megahertz, old technology, 100-year-old AM radio technology, analog technology, not digital radio, is your best bet to get the message out to the state of Victoria. Everyone can hear it, even under bad conditions. Even if it's noisy, everyone can hear it.
And,
now,
and on top
to lose great assets like that, powerful analog AM low-tech transmissions that you can receive on a battery-powered radio while you're on the roof defending your house, that's the stuff you've got to keep. Pushing everything to digital, not the answer.
Look, I think there's a lot that this inquiry is going to dish up. One of the other interesting things too, which is probably not tech-related but worth a mention, is that the categorisation of firestorms these days, like they do severe weather warnings, Category 5 cyclones and all that, we know that that's a over 230-kilometre-hour winds and it's going to have pretty devastating effect. They're talking about bringing that sort of technology in or measurability in for a bushfire now, which I think is also puts it into a little bit of perspective. And this attitude of, oh, gentle, don't scare people, looks like it's going to be turned around and say, hey, guys, don't move, you might die. You know, to put it in black and white like that, oh, that's serious. And then the other interesting thing too, just to paraphrase a lot of things today, is the kids. You know, if the children are involved, I think, you know, it should be a forced evacuation for kids or for people under whatever. Because and after all, imagine if you were a parent, imagine if you were a mum or a dad of young kids and something that you didn't expect happened. How could you live with yourself? That'd be terrible. Get the kids out early. Get someone, get them to say, as soon as you know that it's going to be a bad day. And that's what the Victorian government and the central services did before. I think it was on the 6th. Remember that text they sent out?
Mm.
And got everyone talking. Oh, did you get your text? Yeah, I did. You know, that's what they can do. If they say, you know, move people out there and then, well, great, do it well and truly before time.
It's a very delicate balancing act, though. You don't want people to get warning fatigue. If you get half a dozen of those messages every day, after the third or fourth day, people are going to go, oh, yeah, another text message, whatever. And then, you know, suddenly they won't pay attention to a message like that.
And that's a big problem. You've got to be careful the way you use those.
But that's what Graham was saying before, the cell-based technology, if they can originate it at a cell for a local market.
Only target the people that really need to know at that exact moment.
One of the scary things that they said, they were going to use billing address databases to send SMS.
No. Think, people, please.
Anyway.
Use your brains. Now, listen, one last comment on this, and this is where technology does have a big role to play. If this is a topic that interests you, either from the technology point of view or from any other point of view, www.royalcommission.vic.gov.au. Okay,
that's where it all is.
All the information's there. You can read the interim report yourself, and you can find ways to have input into the process.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Twitter? We do. Why not follow us? For the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed, follow TTR2008 or visit techtalkradio.com.au to see what all the presenters are currently tweeting.
Before we get to the rundown this week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah, you know.
It'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly.
So chances are it may be a nice marriage of technology and provider.
Well, I'm fed up with this "you're not living in the right country" stuff on the internet. That's not the way the internet works.
Oh, well, you will work for the government.
Yeah. I'd be hoping they'd be refunding that pretty quick,
we're
smart.
We're in 3 meg hell, buddy.
I'm 16 or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
And while we're in that break, there's a bit of gossip going on in our chat about, amongst things, about leaving the W's off on a website. Now, I'm all for that. I don't think you need them. But, hey, there's a contentious issue. We've polled our audience of panelists before about this, and it got quite heated in here about that. So let's just do it again and see what happens. Dr. Ron, do you reckon you need the W's on a website these days?
If you have to put W's there, put W's there. You're not one of these people that leaves the 9 off a phone number, are you? Or do you put one in even if there's not supposed to be one there?
Well, it could be an 8.
Let me ask you this question. If you dial a local number on your mobile phone, do you put the 03 in front of it?
If I'm dialing it, no, but if I'm storing it in memory, yes.
Ah, see, I always put the 03, whether I'm dialing or storing.
Yeah, I almost always do as well, yeah.
Andrew is the person who leaves the top W's out.
Absolutely.
So what does that tell you?
Well, that tells you that he's not very bright, quite frankly.
I'm complacent.
It's not up to you to decide. It's up to the owner of the domain to decide how the domain is used.
Yeah.
If they want you to be able to go to the website without putting the W's on, that's up to them, but they don't have to. The website name is the website name.
And using your mobile phone?
A domain name is not a website name. It's the domain name is so much more than just that.
What he said. And if you're using your mobile phone and you hit a cell in Queensland by mistake, you run the risk of dialing a wrong number.
Yeah, well, when you're in Queensland, you would put an 03 in front of it if you're ringing Melbourne. If you're a Queenslander down here in Melbourne, you'd put whatever it is for ringing 07.
What if you're in Echuca?
What if you're in Echuca? Still 03.
Yeah, but 02 is not all that far away.
No.
You don't know whether you're on a cell that's over there or over here.
I like living on the edge, actually. I think it's quite good. You can. Oh, hi, how are you? Did you know you've got the same phone number as Dr. Ron has down in Melbourne, but you're in Sydney?
They'd say, who?
Who?
Prank caller, hang up, yeah.
Someone on the chat's got the right. Yeah, I do this too. They're stored in my phone as +613 and then the phone number.
Ah, yes, in case you're traveling internationally.
Oh, my God, you're all anal. Come on,
that's
boy.
Going in
come
a promo.
On,
that's
who puts 613 in their phone? Goodness me. Next
well,
year.
I hope one day that I might go overseas.
Well, so. I had the problem when I was overseas.
Well, then you won't be taking your handset with me because you won't be able to afford the roaming cost. So forget about that. Just get a handset over there.
I had the problem when I was overseas this time last year that I couldn't use the memories in my phone because I didn't have +61 as the country code.
Ah.
See, I had to actually manually dial everyone I wanted to ring.
You're on holidays. Don't ring people.
Yeah, true. It cost me a lot of money anyway.
I rest my case.
Maybe Andrew's right.
Yeah, if I go to your phone in my phone here, it's stored as *31# +6141 and then the rest of your mobile
so
number.
So you're in the memory, you're deliberately turning on the number sending.
That's right.
So you obviously default to having it off, but when you use the memory to call me, it'll display your
so
number.
I use the memory to do that as well.
That's
so
clever.
That some people see who I am when I ring them.
Yeah, cop that chat room.
What
did I say about that?
Don't.
Can I just throw another spanner into you? In your works here?
Yeah, we haven't got enough spanners over
I
here.
I have a phone which I use voice dialing on, and I use it all the time in the car. So when I push the button, I say Dr. Ron, and it just rings Dr. Ron. So I don't even type the number.
Yeah, mine does that to some
degree.
Yeah,
there you go. So it's just then it dials 03 or whatever the...
It dials what's in memory.
Yeah. And normally we ring mobile phones these days anyway, and you have to put the whole whack in anyway. Or do you put 6-1 in front of your mobile phones as well?
Yeah.
Good.
+61, or you'll end up ringing Tizzy.
Yeah, +6141, whatever it is, yeah.
Funny, isn't it? It's little sort of like insignificant little things that can get, you know, everyone... hot under the collar. It's like the W's on a website. I did a commercial.
Is that where we started?
That's where we started. I did one of my clients the other day. I made a television commercial for them, which is running currently on the television because that's where they run. And he said, can you put the W's back? I said, why? You don't need them. I said, you can go to both. And it looks nicer and better on your screen. You don't have all these W things.
Oh, he wanted them back in.
And he
in.
Said, can you put them back in?
Why did he ask for them back in?
Because he wanted them back in. He's the client. He can ask for anything he wants.
He doesn't need a reason.
He's the client.
I thought there might have been a technical reason why.
And it's his domain if he wants people to use the W's.
His domain. Okay. And I manage it for him. I said, you don't need that. It's just, anyway.
So what if his web server isn't the default server for the domain?
It is. Because I know.
What if it wasn't? what if he had multiple servers for different things?
Only a furniture manufacturer. What do you expect? They've just got things. You know,
well, they might
one server
grow.
Is hosted.
You if you're making TV ads for them, they might grow massively in a hurry.
Has he got a phone number in the ad?
No.
Does it have a +61 on it?
No, and it doesn't have a +61 on it. Yeah, good.
Hey, you're going to ask?
Oh, no, I forgot now. That's how good my train of thought is tonight. So you distracted me beautifully. Let's talk whilst we're on the subject of mobile phones and telephone numbers and silly things like that. Optus Mobile customers hit 8 million. Apparently, they've got a good market share now.
That's good.
You people on there out there who want to be on the zoo, consider yourself one of 8 million critters in the zoo.
Mm.
I must admit, I'm very over their advertising campaign. One more yes with a chimpanzee going, ooh, ooh, ooh. It's just driving me absolutely crazy.
Yeah, and a zebra eating an antelope.
It's that stupid little...
It can't be right.
Those things in... The broadband thing. That's the world's worst ad. We're talking about
what's
now giving
the
free
publicity.
What's
that thing you put the red horns on?
Whatever they are, a badger. It's not even an Australian animal.
Or a possum or...
No.
That was a raccoon.
It's a raccoon, raccoon. It's not even
it's
an Australian
It's got
black
animal. And white striped tail.
And red horns.
Well, Andrew drew red horns on it on the website.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Optus knows about that.
No, they don't. No. Adam Turner says on our chat, one of 8 million suckers.
Yeah. I think I'm learning why I don't watch off-air television anymore.
Anyway, just to also throw...
Or use Optus. Sorry.
You want some stats? The overall growth in customer base was 11% compared to the same time last year. So, I don't know, are they churning away from others or are they winning more of the market share? See, that's the things they don't admit on these little interesting things.
Perhaps their competitors are making it too difficult to pay the bill.
Optus have launched a new satellite. No, they're obviously getting too much. Yes.
Yes.
Sorry, that's what I was thinking.
Watch this.
Yeah. Optus have launched a new satellite too.
Oh.
So, we can all get out there with our laser pointers and see if we can bring it down.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yes, I think that might not necessarily be legal.
Optus today said it launched a new satellite from French Guiana on August 22 that is customer-based, apparently, being boosted by iPhone and other smartphone subscriptions. So ET is going to phone home. I can't see how that's going to work, but nonetheless, they're putting a satellite up there. So it's the D3 satellite, apparently.
That's right. We mentioned this a few weeks ago. It's been planned for a long time.
Yeah.
Got to be a bit of a boost to the Optus's their TV delivery. Is that right?
Probably. It's going to increase their total satellite capacity, supporting more customers, including Foxtel, Sky, New Zealand, and the development of a new business opportunities for broadcast television and the direct-to-home market, more pay TV. That's what the world needs, more pay TV. Speaking of pay TV, have you watched Go yet? The Channel 9 EPG channel?
I have, actually.
Let's go!
Yeah, because all my set-top boxes died, of course, as I've talked about before. And my PVRs and things, so I don't have a digital TV receiver until recently when I bought somebody a new notebook and they threw in with it a little USB digital TV receiver.
A standard little thing or something, was it? Yeah.
Little USB TV receiver. It's a high-def one, actually. I get high-def too.
Can you get a high-definition TV receiver all on a USB stick now?
Yeah.
It's cheap as chips.
Yeah, you plug it in the USB port one end and you plug in a, you know,
Belling Lee antenna connector
in the back of it. And you boom up, full high def on your,
throwing it away.
Computer screen.
So what excuse do manufacturers have for making television still today with only standard def receivers in them?
Oh, they don't.
They have no excuse at all.
They don't. Yes.
Sorry, Graham. Go on.
I can't remember why I was saying that. Oh, because I watched Go.
We were talking about
Go.
Because I had a flick around the other night.
The thing
that still amazes me is how Channel 9 in the data comes up and says the electronic program, whatever their thing is, EPG.
Nine Guide.
It still does. Nine Guide.
Mine didn't.
Mine says Go now, but it doesn't have an exclamation mark. It just has the word Go.
Go.
Go. And you're waiting, but nothing else appears.
Okay. I was watching, I was having a flick around, and I saw I Dream of Jeannie there. It's just like pay TV without the pay.
You know, it is.
Nextel have Bewitched on there.
It's TV One on free to air.
Yeah. Nextel have paid. Well, I have Bewitched. You'll probably find Seinfeld.
Three episodes of Seinfeld in a row. Yeah, it's just like TV One.
Ah, look. Well, there you go. They probably get the same feed from Foxtel. They're part of them, aren't they?
Probably.
Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. Something
glorious
else for everyone
four
to watch.
By three.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's all 4x3. Yeah. But that's good. We need a romantic channel like that. You're talking about AM radio and the old stuff, you know? We're using modern digital technology to bring us the old stuff.
Emulate AM, yes.
Good. So, anyway, we're talking about Optus. They've added 213,000 mobile customers in the last little bit, which has been pretty good for their new mobile and wireless broadband.
That's a good growth rate.
In 3 months. 3 months. 213,000 people in 3 months. So, obviously, haven't read the fine print.
Of Optus or their customers?
No, their customers haven't read the fine print of some of their little packages down there.
Ah.
So please, everyone, read the fine print on those sort of things. Hey, this was also interesting because we're in the last little bits of the show here. We've got to power it on.
The death throes.
Microsoft.
Hardly.
The death throes of the show. The last little
bits. Coming to the end.
The end's the good bit.
Look, I've got another music track to play. Microsoft banned from selling Word. Did you hear about this in the United States?
Yes.
Microsoft has been prohibited from selling its flagship software offering Word in the US because of a successful legal action against the company by Texas.
Yes.
So what's, like, what? I just find that amazing in this day and age.
I can't remember what it was, but yeah, these guys had a patent. Oh, it's on part of the XML reader.
Yes. The prosecuting company...
The method of reading XML files, yeah.
The prosecuting company, which is I4I, supplies Word XML authoring software and has insisted that Microsoft has infringed its 1998 patent, which allows customers to read XML programming language in order to customize document formats. This sounds awfully like the CSIRO when it comes to Wi-Fi patents and things like that.
A little bit.
Everyone's exercising their rights of patents and things like that.
Yeah, you can. If you Google around, you can actually find the legal papers that they lodge with the court in Texas. They're all made available online, and you can actually download the complaint, and that includes a copy of the patent. So you can actually read what the patent is that Microsoft have. Beware though, if you do read it, your brain will leak out your ears. It's
legalese, is it?
Yeah, it's legalese mixed with hideous tech charts. Now, flowchart programming stuff.
Oh, okay.
You know,
you're
not going to have a good time about it if you do read it, but it's all there. It's fascinating.
This court in Texas has ruled that Microsoft has to stop selling Word within 60 days, so 2 months. So, but obviously, I can't see that happening. They'll get around it. They'll appeal it. Someone will come to their senses. Someone will pay a lot of money for a patent, probably. Yeah, that's the way it all works.
Lawyers will make money, as Graham said last week.
Lawyers will make a lot of money out of this one, I suspect, yeah. But, Microsoft might end up having to pay these people something.
Absolutely.
You never know. There might be a case there.
All right, now let's balance out the project. Let's talk about Apple. Apple fixes more Safari security flaws. Apparently, because Safari's becoming a bit more, in demand thanks to the iPhone and other smartphone devices that are using the Safari browser. Security experts are warning that users of Apple Safari web browser, they're making sure that they upgrade to the latest version immediately or risk being hacked because people can run malicious code on computers.
But
and
how
stuff
can
like
you avoid? I mean, every couple of weeks, Apple tries to install Safari on my machine, even though I haven't got it. Oh, yeah. How can people who have got it avoid getting the updates? They're Apple.
Oh, it's quite simple. Just make
Apple
sure
stuff
that
is so aggressive.
It's insidious, isn't it?
Yes. If you go into your MS config from your DOS thing and open up the thing, open up the window that allows you to configure what boots at launch, turn off Bonjour. You won't get any of that rubbish anymore.
Oh, I thought I trashed Bonjour off my machine completely, but well, I still get the Apple software updates.
Oh, well, you must have something there. They've got some other
but
malware
I
do, on your
but
system.
I do have, but I want to get my updates for iTunes. I want the Apple software updated to run, so it updates iTunes for me and QuickTime, because I have those and I want them and I need them. But I don't want Safari on my machine. I don't want Bonjour on my machine, for goodness sake.
Right.
And yet every few weeks it tries to install them for me.
What does Bonjour do? Do you know? I've never investigated.
I know. It doesn't do anything I want.
Some Apple thing.
It's the Apple updater, I believe.
No. It automatically configures network devices, so it'll automatically find an Apple printer out on an Apple network or an Apple NAS box or goodness knows what else, or maybe your Apple TV. I don't know, stuff like that. Yeah.
Cool.
I'm always dismayed when I look in my task manager and I see processes running like iTunes helper and Apple device launcher. I think,
iPod
what?
Thing, and I haven't even got an iPod.
I haven't even got iTunes running. I don't even have an iPod. What do I need an Apple device helper launcher running all the time?
Just in case.
Kill it. Restart
Apple,
the machine. They
Apple
always
have this theory, if you can't beat them, join them. But in this case, if you can't join them, beat them.
Can I have another rant?
Yeah,
you've reminded me of a real rant.
I'm going to have another snake.
You have a snake. I'll have a rant. Apple, listen up, Apple. I'm fed up. I finally got fed up with this. I love my iPod. I love my podcasts. Why do I have to listen to my podcast in the wrong order? Please put an option in my iPod so that I can listen to the oldest one first, not the newest one first. Thank you.
Yeah, that's dumb. That's always been like that.
Yeah, it's always been like that, and it's really annoying. I've sent off feedback to them in the last couple of weeks. And
oh, yeah, they listen to you.
Yeah, they listen to me, yeah. But everybody, send in to Apple feedback. Put in so that you can listen to your podcast in the right order. It would only take an option somewhere. Just hidden away in the options menu. Just which version, which direction do you want to listen to your podcast in?
Yeah.
I think there's method in your madness there, because Dan, one of the guys I'm working with at the moment who works with Avid, which is the editing software that we use, he and I have had a bug which has been giving me no end of problems with QuickTime referencing and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is a company that listens to us. They brought out a patch specially for us, a global company that we were nagging them about the fact that QuickTime reference wouldn't set up shares.
Okay.
And they said, "Oh, that's a problem, isn't it?" And then within a couple of days, they brought out a patch which was particularly to address the problem that we had. So there you go. There's a global company.
Sometimes companies do listen.
Listening to two people here in Australia saying, could you fix this, please? And within days, they had a patch out for
it. And yet there's people all over the world screaming at Apple about this podcast listening order issue. And I can understand why some people might want to listen to the newest one first, because they want to get up to date and then listen to the old ones. But I like listening to things in order.
Yeah.
So please let me, Apple, please.
We used
Apple,
to have that
please.
as an option in the unified messaging systems I used to work on. We used to call it LILO was last in, last out, or FIFO was first in, first out.
So you didn't play your messages in a random order. It'd be like ringing up your voicemail and getting random voicemail messages.
No, well, this is what it was. You could select what order you wanted to listen in, either first in, the first or first in, first out, which was the first one messages had been recorded was what you heard first, or last in, first out, which was the
it makes sense
newest one. Yeah, but it was user configurable and it was easy to do.
Yeah, it shouldn't be hard to put an option in. Yeah, come on, Apple, get on with it.
All right, now like Microsoft had all the antitrust sort of shenanigans that went on recently.
Yes.
It's Apple's turn now. Apple, the darling of the consumer electronics industry, and self-styled underdog fighting the all-powerful Microsoft, is for the first time facing regulatory scrutiny for the alleged monopolistic practices. The U.S. Federal Communications Commission has written to Apple, Google, and AT&T, Apple's exclusive carrier in the United States for the iPhone, and Apple refused to allow an application for the iPhone from Google, which I don't know whether you boys spoke about that, because I think it happened while I was off air for the last couple of days. But they did. They knocked back a Google app.
Mm.
And now everyone's gone, hang on a minute, is this not monopolistic attitude?
And Dr. Schmidt defected as well. We spoke about that last week with Justin. He was on the Apple board.
He was the chief Google chief, but he was on the board of Apple. Yeah.
And he had to
give up his Apple job to concentrate on his Google job because there was a conflict.
Allegedly.
Because Google now do operating systems too.
Yes. Poor Apple. What did you call him? Self-styled
I didn't write that.
Child of...
I'm just plagiarising somebody else's head.
No, underdog.
It says, Apple, the darling of the consumer electronics industry and self-styled underdog fighting the all-powerful Microsoft.
Yeah, right, eh? The self-styled underdog.
Yes.
Poor Apple.
How can you read that with a straight face?
That was written by a chap called Mike Harvey. Go, Mike.
Right.
There you go.
Tongue-in-cheek. Have you seen Google have got all social networking applications to go on their on your iGoogle page now? Yeah, invite all your friends along to play Scrabble. And like, they're allowed to call Scrabble.
Are they?
They are.
Why? Who wouldn't be? Because it's a trademark name.
Yeah, Facebook would want the Scrabble on Facebook had to change their name.
Bajillions of people had to stop playing Scrabble. Scrabulous, it was called on Facebook.
Yeah, because it sounded like Scrabble, and it was a trademark. Yeah, but on Google, they've got the rights.
Well, Scrabble, it depends
on your iGoogle page.
But this is what it all comes down to. It depends on who you get into bed with.
iGoogle wants to be Facebook.
Well, there you go. There's something about Twitter in that too. This week I was going to talk about.
They do,
but
it works just like Facebook. Like with viral applications, you invite all your friends to put the applications on their iGoogle as well.
Well, there you go. This is a Twitter thing. Twitter are taking a leaf out of Apple's book, and basically they're doing cease and desist letters to people that are writing applications for Twitter.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, there's a million and one third-party applications now for Twitter.
Have Twitter got big enough that they've hired their legal team? Yay!
Well, apparently so. people have got used to Apple telling iPhone app developers to get stuffed. That's their words, not mine.
Fair enough.
Now, Twitter is beating some third-party Twitter is beating some third-party application developers with a big legal stick. Apple has stirred up some pretty serious geeky controversy by blaming Hitler for an EFF iPhone application ban, deciding that South Park wallpapers and trouserless Bill Clintons were potentially offensive, while at the same time thinking
any kind of Bill Clinton is offensive. It's potentially offensive. Yeah.
While at the same time thinking that a game that you win by shaking a baby to death was fine in the App Store. Now it seems that Twitter wants to get in on the act as far as telling third-party application developers what is and isn't acceptable. Unlike the balmy Apple corpse, Twitter might have a point. So there you go. Social networking sites, watch out. If you're going to build an app, maybe there's going to be a Twitter store. What next?
A Twitter store.
Where you can develop your apps which are sanctioned by Twitter.
Hang on. Twitter want to be iTunes. iGoogle wants to be Facebook. Who does Facebook want to be? Facebook wants to be MySpace. Yeah.
And MySpace is just growing old.
And Bing's just lost the plot.
Yeah. You're on TikTok Radio.
You are indeed on TikTok Radio. To more serious things, Facebook testing Twitter-like version.
No, that isn't more serious. Facebook testing a Twitter-like version.
What?
Apparently.
Yeah, Facebook wannabe Twitter.
The internet
did we say that before?
Yeah.
The internet was buzzing with the talk of Facebook testing a streamlined light version of the social networking service that could challenge microblogging sensation Twitter.
Yeah.
Apparently, they're currently testing a simplified alternate to Facebook.com that loads a specific set of features quickly and efficiently.
Oh, I got an invitation to try that out from Facebook.
Does it ask you, what are you doing?
No, I clicked on the link and it didn't do anything. 404 or something.
Maybe it says, what have you done?
It says, Dr. Ron, what have you done?
Wasn't while you had your DNS server offline, was it?
It may have been. Maybe that's why.
That'll do it every time.
Yeah, no, it just didn't work for me at all. But if you've used the new Facebook or trialed the new Facebook Twittery thing, you'll know what we're talking about if you've seen it, if you've seen the little link there inviting you to give it a go. Let us know. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
That would be good. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb, and Graham Callaghan in this evening. Microsoft and Nokia. Nokia or Nokia?
You say potato. I say potato. No, I'd say Nokia.
Nokia? That's what I would say. Nokia. Graham, Nokia. Are you Nokia or Nokia?
No, Nokia. Yeah, some people say Nokia, don't
Nokia,
they?
Nokia. I don't know. I can't even.
I have to ask Nokia. Some Danish
now
listeners.
Now that I think of it, yeah. Is it Danish, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Swedish.
No, Swedish. No, they're all Europe.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, they're all the
EU. Same. Yeah, yeah. They're all the same.
Back on topic, Microsoft and Nokia have formed an alliance to rival RIM, which is the makers of BlackBerry.
Research in Motion.
Yeah. So I wonder if Microsoft and Nokia are feeling the pinch here, because BlackBerry's are well and truly entrenched in the business community. Apple's is just a fashion statement, but at the end of the day, what Microsoft would be offering, you know, what's the mobile, Windows Mobile?
Yeah, Windows
application,
Mobile.
Building that onto a Nokia platform. So maybe we're going to start seeing Nokia phones running Windows, which we are already, aren't we?
Yeah, on the PDA type phones, they're running Windows Mobile.
Yeah, well, the alliance means that the latest version of Microsoft's Office applications, including Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and messaging, will be available on a range of Nokia mobile phones, which make up 45% of the global smartphone market. So there you go. They're just going to start loading up more applications on Nokia phones.
Finish.
They are finished.
No,
well done.
Yes.
Yes.
So we were right.
Yeah. Just close. Just the next one.
Yeah. Danish, Finnish, Sweden. They're all the same.
All same.
Yeah.
Apologies to the
Inga.
Swedes and the Danes.
Snowy parts of Europe. Yeah.
Snowy.
Now, hang on. It says here how to predict. Can you read these strange? Yep. Do you know how to read those?
Says he, pointing at his laptop. Good for radio, Graham.
Yeah, sorry.
Phonetic
how to pronounce
language
thing.
I don't.
It's got an apostrophe and an N and a backward C and a K and an I and an A.
That's so how, if you that, read that.
If you know IPA, then
that's how to pronounce,
how to pronounce Nokia.
What we say is Nokia. You said, you just
said
Nokia.
Nokia.
You did.
Damn.
Now, that was telling.
Yeah.
So the subconscious is telling you it's no. What do you say? Nokia.
Okay.
Nokia.
Now, I don't know whether you guys spoke about this the other day, but I came across this during doing a bit of research. Exatel, which is an ISP, is planning to ban peer-to-peer during off-peak periods. During off-peak periods.
No, we didn't talk about this.
Well, Exatel, which is an ISP, is considering, because that's when everyone does their peer-to-peer, or they should be doing it in the off-peak periods when they download all their things that they want to download. Well,
why on earth would my plan have 40 gigs of peak time downloads and 110 gig of off-peak downloads? What do they think I'm doing in my off-peak time?
It's a very good question.
To use up my 110 gig.
It's a very good question that you ask. Because let's face it, why do you have such a large data limit if you're not going to be... Yeah.
Graham listens to a lot of podcasts.
He does.
A lot of podcasts.
He watches a lot of video podcasts.
Yeah, good.
And a lot of time spent on YouTube.
Anyway, Exatel is considering a ban on peer-to-peer network traffic during the first 2 hours of its off-peak period should users continue to set their peer-to-peer downloads to go off at the very second of the provider's off-peak period.
Yes, that's right. A lot of these peer-to-peer programs, you can program them when they're allowed to use the bandwidth.
Of course you can.
Yeah, for that reason, yeah.
So when Exatel says, off-peak starts at 1 a.m., then literally
5 minutes past one.
The bandwidth just goes woof. As everyone's, Exatel Chief John Linton said that he will place a ban on peer-to-peer network traffic during the first 2 hours of the provider's midnight to noon off-peak period if users elect to make that the off-peak period. So, obviously they're just getting a big whack on bandwidth, which is slowing things down at midnight. So, good on you. But isn't that just moving the goalposts?
Yep, it is. That's exactly what it is.
It's just going to move the spike to 2 a.m. rather than midnight? Goodness me.
Look, they set the rules that made the users behave this way in the first place. Think about that, Mr. Exatel.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And and finally, this evening, iiNet, probably one of the top ISPs in Australia, they posted a $26 million profit. So that man, that geeky man on the television that does those silly ads.
I like those ads. I think they're clever.
They're quite cute, aren't they? He looks like such a geek and a dork.
Mm.
Anyway, they're doing quite well. 26 mil for a period of time where peer-to-peer file sharing is still allowed on peak times.
I'm anxiously awaiting iiNet setting up ADSL 2 Plus in my telephone exchange.
Oh, likewise. So you and I are on the same
independent
exchange.
Independent from the Telstra network.
Anything apart from the local incumbent would be good in that telephone exchange.
Because Telstra got wrapped over the knuckles, didn't they?
Well, they did. Telstra have banned, and that's one of the exchanges, I believe. I could be wrong, and I could stand corrected.
No, I think you're right.
But that's one of the connections where Telstra said, no, you can't get into that exchange. And as a result, there's nothing there apart from Telstra stuff.
Mm.
So as a result, all of us poor people who live off that exchange.
You can get ADSL 2 Plus off the exchange.
Oh, yeah,
but
it's got to be through Telstra Resale.
A Telstra resold service, that's right.
Absolutely. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. When we return, Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week.
Suffering and suck it out. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens.
Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, really?
If you need high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter.
It automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
By the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was all too hard and you drove away.
That's right.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
Latitude's everything to me. Yeah. I like knowing Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day. Or my wife, for that matter. But they're both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget's a really cool-looking mobile telephone, the Porsche Design P9522. So if you win touch lotto, have a look at this little guy. It's milled from a single aluminium block.
Milled?
Yes. There's a 2.8-inch glass touchscreen.
It's not made by Apple, is it?
No, it's not. It's made by Porsche. It's scratch-proof. And the glass touchscreen protects a high-resolution OLED display. It has inbuilt fingerprint security. It's got GPS, Wi-Fi, and a 5-megapixel camera with autofocus, LED flash, and digital zoom.
What's the standard ringtone?
I don't know. Yeah. Made by the people that make the race cars. Its RRP is $1,800.
Oh.
But you can have a look, find out more at www.porschedesign.com.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This week's website, www.lyricsplugin.com. Lyrics, L-Y-R-I-C-S, plugin, P-L-U-G-I-N.com. This is a piece of software you can download from here, which is tailored for music fans. To put it simply, it's an add-on to view lyrics in Winamp or Windows Media Player. So no more searching for lyrics. Just start listening to your favourite songs and lyrics will be displayed automatically. And if the lyrics aren't found, you can add them yourself. Now, that was posted on the forum by Sean O'Reilly. So thanks very much for that post, Sean. It's been shared with everybody now. That's our website of the week, www.lyricsplugin.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Jobless people seeking information about their benefits on the Brazilian Labor Ministry's website, which is presumably the Brazilian equivalent of our Centrelink website, were forced to type in passwords such as bum and shameless.
What?
An apologetic Labor minister, Mr. Carlos Lupi, blamed a private company that created the site's security system. The Labor minister didn't name the company, but he said its contract with the ministry wasn't being renewed, and that may have prompted the pranks.
Did you say his name was Lupi?
Lupi, L-U-P-I.
Mm-hmm.
The insults were discovered after an irate user wrote to the O Globo newspaper in Brazil about it earlier this week. The site was temporarily taken down, but by Friday it was up and running without the insulting words. So you were forced to use insulting words as passwords, other than the passwords that were given to you to access your... their equivalent of the Centrelink benefits and information.
It must have been devised by the same people that do shrink those plastic wrap things that takes you 3 hours and you cut your fingers on when you get gadgets out of those plastic shrink wrap things.
Oh, I hate those things. How are you supposed to open them without, like, a box cutters or...
It's a very good question that you ask. I've recently bought some electric toothbrushes, which was made by a company that makes those sort of things. And I'm not kidding you. I reckon it drew blood. I seriously had to go and get the secateurs and the wire cutters to get into the plastic
Like a heat-sealed plastic
all
box.
All the way around. Yeah, there's no point to open them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to open them with scissors.
Yeah. And even then, when you cut it with the scissors flex because the plastic's so rigid.
You take your fingernail off and...
No, buy decent scissors.
I use my side cutters at times just to get a few nicks in there and then you just cut it and strip it underneath that, so... There's shocking things. Anyway, sorry, Dr. Ron, was that it? I didn't mean to digress. That's your odd spot with your Brazilian... Mr. What's-His-Name or whatever it was.
Brazilian Mr. Labor Minister, Carlos Lupi.
Mr. Lupi?
Yes, at the Brazilian Labor Ministry website.
Now, just before we go this evening, for those of you who aren't aware, the ABC screened Four Corners this evening. Four Corners all about online safety and criminals and what they've been doing. So if I can recommend you all to go and do a bit of homework, jump on abc.net.au iView.com/iTunes. iView.
iView. And if you haven't got broadband to get iView, then your next best bet is to go down and get yourself a set-top box and have a look at it when it reruns on ABC 2.
Yes, yes.
It's a good reason to go and get yourself kitted up with digital TV.
Correct, and it'll be some really good tips in that tonight too. Also on Wednesday night on Television 2, on ABC Television, there's another special all about online safety and what these people are doing and what they're up to and all that sort of stuff in the background too. So much worth a bit of a look-see if you can find yourself in front of a telly on those nights. So there you go. There's a few interesting tips for you if you're in the mood for a bit of TV. That's where I reckon a lot of people were tonight, because I think there were a few interested comments coming out of the chat, people watching Four Corners and stuff like that. So well worth it. Go and check it out, because it's your security online after all.
Mm.
Delete, delete, delete. Very good tip, really, to those people that aren't otherwise experienced. Anyway, that's it for tonight's show. It's been fun being back. Have you
good
enjoyed me having you back?
Yeah, good to have you back.
Music's been all right?
Certainly a lot less work to do. That's for sure, during the week.
Oh, yeah, took two of you to do this job over here.
Yeah, it certainly did. Yeah.
Oh, at least I missed only one button this evening and all that sort of stuff. So hopefully won't be too bad for next week. All right.
Justin sends his apologies, by the way. He might be off for a couple of weeks, but he'll be back soon.
Yeah, I might get Adam in one night.
Do that,
That's good. Chat. That'd be really good. All right, guys, until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.